This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Until the words Common Core came along, there's been nothing quite as divisive in American education as the words charter school, set up to provide a different kind of educational opportunity with different rules and oversight, public in name, but shielded from many of the requirements of public schools. Created primarily for low-income students in urban areas, charter schools have been cropping up around the nation, including 18 here in Connecticut, serving about 7,000 students, with more in the works. The charter school idea has many supporters across the political spectrum and the economic spectrum, from Bill Gates, who's pumped millions into charters, to parents in cities like Hartford and Bridgeport who work to get their kids into limited slots, hoping for a chance at a better education. But the results there aren't exactly clear. Are students getting a better education? The National 2013 Stanford University report had good and bad news about charters and how students performed compared to their peers in public schools. In some cases, much better. In some cases, much worse. But what has us talking about charter schools today, where we live, is the way charter schools are created, managed, and the oversight the public has over them. In Hartford, the FBI is looking into the operations of FUSE, the Family Urban Schools of Excellence, and the Jamokey Academy Charter School Group. FUSE's CEO, Michael Sharp, resigned recently after revelations surfaced that academic credentials he'd claimed in school materials, biographies, and legislative testimony were untrue. Sharp has a criminal record and served two prison terms. It's now come out that the former charter school leader, who is living in one of Jamokey's buildings, regularly missed rent payments. Federal authorities are investigating how millions of dollars in public funding was dispersed to the charter group. Connecticut State Department of Education was served with a federal grand jury subpoena last week, seeking all emails of Commissioner Stephen Pryor dating back to 2012. When reporters from the Hartford Courant, who've been uncovering a series of stories on this issue, showed up at FUSE offices, they saw workers there busily shredding documents pertaining to the school FUSE runs. The State Education Department has called this unacceptable. Many charter school advocates have condemned FUSE's actions, but the entire story has raised many questions about what we can and can't know about charters. Nonprofit private operators say they're not always subject to freedom of information laws in the same way public school systems are, even though the money to pay for education comes from taxpayers. Today, where we live, charter schools. They've become a huge political issue in Connecticut, and they seem to be a big part of our education future. So what do we need to make them better? To make them more accountable. Join the conversation, 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. You can comment on our website, WNPR.org. Or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at Where We Live. We have a panel of guests, but I want to welcome in first Robert Cotto Jr., who is a director of Urban Educational Initiatives at Trinity College and a member of the Hartford Board of Education. Welcome to our program, first of all. And I'd like to just ask you to respond to some of the latest developments in this story, the FBI now investigating FUSE. As someone on the Board of Education, how does all this strike you?
Well, I think it's troubling because what we're finding is that pretty much each day we pick up the newspaper and see a new story about Jamokey FUSE. And I think what's important to think about is, well, who's in charge here, right? Who's accountable for these particular issues? Pretty much all the executives at Jamokey FUSE have kind of left. And so we don't know who's in charge here and who's going to pick up the pieces and make sure that in the long term, Jamokey is able to kind of sustain itself because it is a school and there are kids that go to the school. And then who takes responsibility? And then in the long run, how do we make sure that this doesn't happen again in other charter schools and also at Jamokey FUSE?
And that question of how do we make sure this doesn't happen again is something that we're going to be exploring throughout the course of the hour. But before we turn to someone who is involved in this very same issue in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in just a moment, I guess I'm wondering if you can explain to us, as a member of the Board of Education, what exactly do you know and don't you know about how FUSE or charter schools like Jamokey are actually run?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that charter schools are, by state law, independent entities. They're basically school boards on their own. They're not part of the Hartford School Board or any other school board. They're their own school board. And so it's important to recognize that under state law, they're classified as public schools operated by nonprofit entities. Typically, those nonprofit entities are private corporations, right, like Jamokey FUSE. And so school boards have a very interesting relationship between the charter schools where we don't have any sort of accountability in regards to these charter schools. We don't have any say in the terms of operations that they do, their disciplinary practices, their kind of operations financially. However, public school districts like Hartford Public Schools, we actually do pay for special education services for schools like Jamoke and Achievement First in Hartford. We also provide transportation for in-district schools. So there's some relationship there, and a lot of it is to support the charter schools in addition to like buildings and stuff. But a lot there's really no accountability on the part of the elected school board, or in this case, a mixed school board in Hartford, to really do anything about Jamoke Fuse at this time.
As we said at the top of the program, because of this unraveling scandal, Hartford now doesn't have a relationship with Fuse. A school in Bridgeport doesn't have a relationship with Fuse. A planned school in New Haven has also dropped them as part of the organization that was going to run that school. And the same thing has happened in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And so we're going to turn to Patrick Dobard, who is state superintendent of the Louisiana Recovery School District, for a moment. Superintendent Dobard, welcome to Where We Live. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
I guess I'm wondering first if you can explain the decision made in Baton Rouge there to drop this company as the organization that was going to run one of your charter schools.
Yeah, so we were watching very closely the developments over the last several weeks in Connecticut. And initially we felt as though that the organization was solid enough and separate enough to where it wouldn't affect the planned operations for Dalton Elementary School in Baton Rouge. But subsequently, the developments, I believe, two Fridays ago, once the state dropped the last school, and in essence, in our mind, Fuse no longer existed in Connecticut, it raised serious concerns. And so that following Monday, we acted swiftly once we met with the last of the existing leadership of Fuse. And in Louisiana, through the authority of law, in my position, we're able to do what we call in Louisiana site schools and facilities. And so basically, it's a placement of approved charter authorizers. And so I immediately revoked the ability for Fuse to start up at this school, and then subsequently just made another decision to cite an operator, which is Celerity Education Group. And so with that, Fuse would not be allowed, and they would not be given the opportunity to run the school, and they've made a decision to start the process of handing in their charter.
How did you select Fuse to run this school in the first place?
So we have a very strong process through our State Board of Education where applicants, they go through a process that facilitated by an independent entity, in this case, is SchoolWorks. Years ago, it was NACSA, National Association of Charter School Authorizers. And they go through a series of processes, letter of intent. They fill out an application, a rigorous process with that. They go through interviews. And then ultimately, we make recommendations to the state board in conjunction with the SchoolWorks recommendations. And then ultimately, the state board approve the charter applicants. And then there's another process that we've done. We've created a portfolio office of accountability, in essence, where we have a series of checklists and checks on the charter operators before they ramp up that they have to meet certain standards. And so we have close to a decade of just a number of successful charters that we've launched. And in this particular instance, this is one, the first time anything like this has actually happened. And so it's an extreme outlier. I think overall, when you look at it, it's particularly in New Orleans, we're going to become really statewide, the first all-charter school district. This is like an anomaly. And the beautiful thing about it is that in a time of crisis, we were able to have another approved operator immediately ready to step in. And so it's not so much about not having the ability to continue to have other individuals come in and serve you as well. It's just having the foresight to know that, you know, ultimately maybe things may happen and we as a state have to position ourselves to act swiftly and decisively in order to provide the best education possible for kids. And so, again, we have a very strong system of accountability. Our track record shows that, and this is just truly an isolated incident that's very unfortunate.
We're talking with Patrick Dobard, who is state superintendent of the Louisiana Recovery School District here on Where We Live. A Fuse originally was selected as a charter operator to open Dalton Elementary School this fall, but they've decided to drop Fuse after news about the former executive director's criminal background and other things that have come out in the Hartford Current surrounding Fuse here in Hartford. One thing that I think Robert Cotto just mentioned that I think is kind of important for me to understand, this is happening just a few weeks before school's supposed to open, and we do a lot of stories and have a lot of conversations about how difficult it is to make changes in a school system, to ramp things up. I mean, for goodness sakes, we've been talking about implementing the Common Core over the course of several years, and even then, many school districts aren't able to make the changes necessary to start a new school year the right way. How on earth can you possibly switch operators just a couple weeks beforehand and think that the folks at Dalton are going to get a really, really good education?
great question. And so Solidarity Education Group was already approved to run 4 charter schools in Louisiana. They've opened up, they started the process to open 3 of them in several weeks. And so for this one, they've already had the team, the back office support, and the structure in place. Consequently, the leader that was identified by Fuse to run Dalton Elementary School was our transformation leader we had that ran a high school literally across the street that we were phasing out. And so she was already on board, had started to already build the team. When we approached Solidarity about operating the school, they told us that they could immediately come in, that last Friday just passed. They were about to start their final 3-week training for all of their teachers, and they said, if we can do this in enough time, we can get them on board by that Friday. So that Monday, we actualized on changing the operators. That Wednesday, we had a full meeting with the staff that was hired, and we gave them all the opportunity that day to fill out applications, do checks based off Solidarity's model, and to see if they were interested in working. Plus, Solidarity actually had educators that they were just waiting to hire if they had more available positions. And so with a local leader that's been in education well over 10 years, who was already building a team, the biggest change was getting a better understanding of the curriculum and the delivery of that. And so that team has just started the work on it. Last night we had a parent meeting at Dalton. Not one complaint from any family about changing the operators. And we had well over, close to 80 parents that attended. And the main thing they wanted to know was things around uniforms and bus schedules, and we were able to answer all that. And they were extremely excited about the opportunity to have, another operator come in and establish what we feel like is going to be a great environment for kids.
Well, and I wonder if you could just hang on for 1 second, sir, if you don't mind. I just want to get to a couple phone calls here on a program as we talk about charter schools here on Where We Live. Michael is calling. And, Michael, go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Oh, hello. Thank you. Yeah, I'm calling in with a question about what will be going on with the other Jamokin schools at this time. Are they being looked at, too, such as the conservatory?
And your line is breaking up a little bit, Michael, but I think the question is, what's going to happen with the other Jamokin schools, the Jamokin schools in Hartford? There's 3 of them, from what I understand. Fuse, of course, operates other schools. What can you tell us about that, Robert Cotto?
Well, I think it's important to remember that we have Jamokin Fuse, which was kind of doing this commissioner's network operating of kind of more traditional public schools. And then, like you said, the caller, they have the regular Jamokin schools, which are the original charter schools, chartered, I think, in either 1997 or 1998. And I think Jamokin has now separated ties with with Fuse, which is kind of splitting hairs in some ways, because what's happened is that Jamokin Fuse was a charter management company, and they were kind of a separate nonprofit. Jamokin Charter School is also another nonprofit. So you had a situation in which one nonprofit was operating another nonprofit. And so it's getting very confusing. But I think at the end of the day, Jamokin Charter School Inc., which is one separate 501c3, is going to continue to operate. But I think the question remains, how is the State Board of Education, how is the commissioner going to make sure that these sorts of things don't happen in other charter schools? And how do they make sure it doesn't happen at Jamokin in particular? And how was the relationship between Fuse and Jamokin? Because Jamokin was paying Jamokin Fuse charter management fees. And so money was being diverted from Jamokin Charter School, which should have gone to the school to actually help that school operate, and going instead to Fuse, another nonprofit. And so there's a lot to sort out, but I think it's an important question from the caller.
And thank you very much for that question. Before we move on our conversation, I'd love to get some thoughts from our other panelists today. And, of course, you can call us at 860-275-7266 and join this conversation as we talk about charter school oversight. Preston Green is here. He's John and Carla Klein, professor of urban education at the NEAG School of Education at the University of Connecticut. And Preston, thanks so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I'd love it if first you can just give me your broad thoughts on this scandal and what exactly it means for the charter school movement in Connecticut, what we should take away from this, and maybe what we learn moving forward as far as oversight.
Right. Well, thank you very much for that question. I have to say that I'm still reading in the newspapers as everyone else is, really trying to catch up with what is going on. I can talk nationally about what states have done with respect to the issues that were raised. Many states will have separation in that the CEO or the people who are running the charter school or who are part of the charter school board are also not members of the management organization. So there is that separation between the charter school management organization and also this and also the charter board. Many states also have like conflict of interest provisions, whereby the person who is, you know, they have to report any sort of financial dealings that they have, and they have full disclosure. So those are certainly some steps that can be taken. I have seen the Department of Education talking about adopting some of these approaches, and that would go a long way to addressing this problem in the future.
I'm wondering, Patrick Dobard in Louisiana, some of those provisions that our expert here has talked about, are those things that are in place in Louisiana?
Yes, we have, again, we have a strong accountability system. Within the application process, we have background checks with the leaders, but the heads of the board, there's full checks on organizations. They have to go through a checklist with financial stability. We look at the academic track record, and so it's very detailed. And what we're looking to do now is to see if there's any way that we can even put more, a more robust look into all of that. But right now, again, this has just been a total outlier, and it's just, you know, extremely unfortunate, but we feel like we have a very strong system already in place.
Patrick Dobard is state superintendent of the Louisiana Recovery School District. Thank you for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me. Y'all have a good day.
You as well. I'd like to get some comment here from Jennifer Alexander. She's chief executive officer of the Connecticut Coalition for Achievement Now. It's known as CONCAN. Jennifer, good to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm wondering what your reaction is to this FEW scandal.
So I think, first of all, I want to just really clearly condemn the unethical and potentially illegal behavior of FEWs and Michael Sharp. And I think, as Mr. Dobard said, these are actions of a single organization led by an individual, and I think they are isolated and in no way representative of public schools, including charter schools. I think it's important to recognize that some of the policies that were recommended earlier actually are in place in Connecticut already. We can do more, but this organization was clearly in violation of existing laws.
Well, what can we do more?
So our law is 20 our charter law is about 20 years old. It has not kept pace with best practices nationally. The National Alliance for Public Charter Schools, which is a national organization that reviews and ranks state laws, rated ours 33 out of 43 states. We can, I think, do more around making sure that good governance happens in these schools, mandatory training for charter boards, more clear and tight language around anti-nepotism policies, around financial management, around conflict of interest, et cetera. I think there's a lot more that can be done. We can also, as other states have done, issue performance contracts so that it's very clear that if schools aren't performing or aren't performing sort of basic management practices, there are automatic consequences for those schools. And that's what other states have done and what I think we need to do here. If I could go back just for a moment to clarify what I think is happening around the existing schools. So, again, this is these are the actions of one organization. FEWS no longer runs any schools, and it's now up to the state and to the FBI to determine the extent of the wrongdoings in that school. It's my understanding that the Jamokey schools have also been placed on probation.
For 90 days, from what I understand.
Yeah.
We got a tweet from Jennifer here who asks, I think, a key question about this. As we talk about things that could be done to strengthen our current laws and oversight, charter schools, she writes, should have the same disclosure, FOI, the Freedom of Information, and background checks as traditional public schools. What are they hiding, she asks. So we can talk about background checks as one thing, but obviously in the press I'm very interested in this disclosure law. We've heard time and time again from various charter school operators that we're operating as private nonprofits. We don't have to give you over information the way that a public school would, even though there's public money being spent. When we see what happened with the Hartford Courant, where literally people are shredding documents in front of their face, it seems as though that's something that needs to be tightened. Would you and CONCAN get behind strengthening the laws around freedom of information, allowing us all to see the operations of charter schools?
So the news in the Hartford Courant is absolutely appalling, and the idea that people would interfere and actively destroy potential documents that are relevant to an investigation is totally unacceptable. It's important to note that charter schools are subject to all of the same transparency, Freedom of Information Acts, and accountability laws that regular traditional public schools are also held to. I think where we get into some larger questions that we're looking into right now are around charter management organizations and how those laws apply to them.
But that's really – that's what we're talking about, is about charter management organizations. Obviously, you know, the school itself, we can find out all sorts of stuff about the way the schools run. But as Robert Cotto already said, the management organizations may be diverting money from one to the other. As you said, these are the sorts of things that we probably need to know so that we can get a little bit closer to the truth about how they're run and the operators who are running them.
And that's exactly where I think we need to do more work to update our laws. So a couple of things. One is these management organizations already do have to provide a lot of information to the public. They're like any nonprofit, like my organization, we have to release audited financials. We have to do 990s. They also have to apply to the state and then reapply to the state every 5 years. And there's a lot of information about their budgets, et cetera, in those applications. Can we do more around that? I think so. And we need to look at laws and we need to look at best practices in other sectors to figure out how this applies to non-governmental organizations that are providing public service.
What would those look like, Robert Cotto, in your mind? I mean, what would those new laws be so that we could find more information?
Well, I think it needs to clarify in state law. Well, I think let's take a step back. State law currently says that charter schools are subject to the Freedom of Information Act as any other state agency, any other public agency like the State Department of Education, Department of Corrections. And I think what's happened here is we're running into this issue of these private nonprofit corporations are saying, hey, wait a minute, we're private. You can't take our records because we're a private company. We're a 501c3 that's private. Even though the state law clearly says that these are public agencies like any other public agency. And I think it's important to for the people that are in charge, the commissioner, the State Board of Education, you know, all the way to the governor to say, well, wait a minute, you're a public agency like any other public agency. You need to turn over all of these documents. And I think that's what's, I think, kind of disappointing about this episode is that, you know, they're behaving as if they're private companies, even though the state law clearly says that they're public, according to FOI.
Well, and Preston Green, this is an awful lot of the work that you've done right at the NEAG School of Education. I mean, are they public? Are they private?
That's the $64,000 question. What has been happening?
Maybe $64 million or so, but anyway, yeah.
What's been happening in my research, what I have found is that charter schools pick and choose, that they're having it both ways, that when it comes to funding issues under state constitutional law, they argue that they're public. But when it comes to issues such as student rights, teacher rights, or for that matter, disclosure laws, they argue that they're private. And they're able to do this because there is no clear definition of what it means to be a public school. And when these laws were written, I don't think that some of these things were anticipated. So what I have – my co-authors and I have recommended is that in many situations you have to make it clear in the statute where schools need to act or charter schools need to act as public schools would. And certainly disclosure would be one of those areas in which a charter school should act as a public school, in which the management organization should also act as a public school would in terms of disclosure.
A quick comment. I know you want to jump in.
Sure. I mean, I think what we're seeing now is we need to take a step back, clearly look at where Connecticut's laws are. But I think we have to proceed with caution. This was a deeply flawed organization engaging in potentially criminal activity. And if we develop policies around this deeply flawed organization, I think we're going to end up with deeply flawed policy.
But don't we always develop laws in our state and in the country based on things that happened that are bad that we didn't see coming? If we had stronger laws to be able to root out operators who are not operating the way we think they should or potentially illegally, if we had stronger laws, wouldn't it keep people from doing that? Because while the gentleman from Louisiana says this is an outlier, and while this seems like an outlier, there have been many other documented cases around the country of episodes just like this. There have been scandals dating back to the very early days of charter schools that feel very much like this. And so the question is, if we had stronger laws, isn't this the time to implement them?
I think it's a combination of stronger laws and stronger enforcement of those laws. So we have to do sort of both. At the same time, we can't lose sight of the fact that this really is an outlier in Connecticut. And we have lots of other schools that are providing a really high-quality education for kids and thousands of parents on wait lists for those schools. And the risk of going overboard is that we make it even harder for these schools to operate and deliver a great education for kids.
But what's harder about making – what's harder for them to operate by making them responsible to give information about how they operate and how they make money? Why is that making it more difficult for them? I'm not quite sure I understand.
So I think we have to – every single time an organization receives a FOIA request, that is time and money spent to comply with that request. That's time and money away from educating kids. I am not saying that organizations don't need to provide that information, but I think we have to proceed with caution. We need to think about how we can tighten management of those schools. Those charter boards are responsible for making sure this doesn't happen, in addition to the state. And we have to make sure that those boards are doing their job and that we have swift consequences for schools that aren't following those policies.
And Robert, a very quick thought before we take a break.
Just a quick thought, and we can pick this up again. I think Jennifer is correct that there's a very wide variety of charter schools throughout the state, and I think maybe we can pick that point up after the break.
And we will do that. We're talking with Robert Cotto Jr., who is Director of Urban Educational Initiatives at Trinity College. He's a member of the Hartford Board of Education. Jennifer Alexander is here. She's Chief Executive Officer of CONCAN, Connecticut Coalition for Achievement Now. And Preston Green, who is the John and Carla Klein Professor of Urban Education at the NEAG School at the University of Connecticut. When we come back from our break, we're going to take a series of your phone calls at 860-275-7266 about charter schools and charter school oversight here in Connecticut and around the nation. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. We're talking about charter schools and charter school oversight on the program today in the wake of a scandal surrounding Fuse, the charter school management company that's now being investigated by the FBI. We have in studio with us Preston Green, who teaches education at UConn School of Education, the NEAG School, Jennifer Alexander, who's CEO of CONCAN, Robert Cotto Jr., who's the director of Urban Educational Initiatives at Trinity. He's also on the Hartford School Board. We're taking your phone calls now at 860-275-7266, and a lot of people do want to get involved. So here's Claudia in Bridgeport. Hi, Claudia.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi, hello, Jen. So my name is Claudia Phillips. I'm from Bridgeport. My three children attend Achievement First Schools. We absolutely love the educational model and the school culture that they have at AF. Actually, we need more great educational options in our city of Bridgeport, and I personally go out and I'm advocating for more. Regarding Fuse, they really have no reflection and no impact on the outstanding work that teachers and organizations are doing for our children. And it's really sad what took place, but they really have no impact on what we're doing, on the education that our children are receiving. And if we're going to stay focused on our children, you should separate Mr. Sharp because he doesn't represent any of us. And that's really what I wanted to say.
Claudia, thank you very much for your phone call. Maria is calling from Bridgeport as well. Hi, Maria. What's on your mind?
Hi. First of all, I really wanted to say that I'm so offended that Jennifer Alexander would now try to denounce Fuse and separate from them after she's been one of their most significant proponents in the entire state and even submitted a letter of recommendation for the New Haven Charter School that's going to open in partnership with Fuse. In addition, it really frustrates me when we constantly refer to charter schools as nonprofit. To give you an example, we have a new charter school opening in Bridgeport this fall. Over the next 5 years, they will manage 1,500 students and earn $1.6 million in management fees. At the same time, our superintendent of public schools, true public schools, will supervise 90,000 students and earn less than $1.2 million. For this constant claim of nonprofit status, I just want to say that's just absolutely false. These management fees are outrageous. They're taxpayer dollars. And instead of being worried about how much it's going to cost to make sure charter schools comply with FOI laws and have some level of accountability and how that's going to take resources away from children, why don't you look at the management fees, which take millions away from kids and goes into these operators' pockets?
Well, why don't we look at that? What I'm going to do, and thank you, Maria, very much for your phone call. Let me get a quick comment from Jennifer Alexander, then I'd like to ask Preston Green a little bit more about that. But I'm wondering if you have a reaction, Jennifer.
Sure. I'd say two quick things. I did provide a letter of recommendation for Fuse And in part, that's because the Jamoke schools in Hartford have an excellent track record of delivering student achievement for kids. And I think that's why this incident is so shocking, actually, is because despite a lot of the really deeply troubling information that's coming out about the management of the school, the kids at that school, as far as we know, are getting a great education. So it's really, really even more shocking. But, you know, the facts were what they were at the time. As far as the management fees, I don't have details about the numbers that this caller was talking about, but I do know that charter school management organizations, and I'm so glad she mentioned the school in Bridgeport, which is Great Oaks, that is going to be opening its doors and specifically designed to serve English language learners. Some of those management fees allow the management company or the organization to provide the same services that a district would, because that's essentially what they have to do since they're totally separate from the school district. So that includes things like professional development for teachers, management of the school. Because they are nonprofit organizations, all that money goes back into services for kids. So it's not as if they're being siphoned away into something else.
And we know that?
They're nonprofit organizations. They have to submit audited financials every year. You can go on to GuideStar and look at exactly where that money is going.
So then before I turn to Preston Green quickly to talk about this, the for-profit versus nonprofit piece of this, is that the best way to spend money? I mean, if we've got already lots and lots of money coming into a school district, a poor school district like Bridgeport, that's trying to educate an awful lot of kids, is it the best use of money to say, let's just throw out the number $1.5 million to have a separate entity then manage all the same things that the school district is already managing?
Well, I think when we've got really big problems to solve in Connecticut, for example, 2 out of 3 African-American, Hispanic, and low-income students in Connecticut can't read at grade level by grade 3. The research is really clear that if you can't read at grade level by grade 3, you're less likely to graduate from high school. You're more likely to end up in prison. We've got to do something about that problem. Charter schools are part of, but not the entire solution. We're investing public money in those because it's critical that we make sure that kids get a great education. It's critical to the future of our state. There's a separate and parallel conversation happening about whether we're actually funding our public schools appropriately in general. We have a pretty broken school funding system in this state. Kids that have high levels of student need aren't being funded fairly based on their need across the state. That is a problem we have to address. At the same time, we have to look at all solutions that are helping us improve outcomes for kids across the state.
I'm wondering, Preston Green, if you could respond to our caller's comments about that, about money going into management of these charter schools.
Nationally speaking, this has been an issue in that, you know, charter schools do get the money and the management organizations get the money, and then they have fought against reporting it. I can't speak about what's happening in Connecticut, but nationally, they have fought against reporting it. And so a number of organizations, including the Annenberg Institute for Educational Reform at Brown University, among others, have said that there should just be disclosure about this money, that if you get this money, then you should report what you're doing with it. That's simple. Now, with respect to what are for-profit or not-for-profit, Gary Myron, who's a noted educational researcher, has noted that I think that 36% of charter schools across the nation are operated by educational management organizations. These are organizations that provide for the running of the schools. And these organizations, I think, educate about 44% of the students across the country. And in terms of profit versus not-for-profit, it's like evenly divided. So you have some nonprofits who are EMOs and then some for-profits who are EMOs.
So if I could, in Connecticut, state law prohibits any for-profits from running schools in Connecticut. And I think sort of the important point to remember is that running and managing schools is a very serious undertaking. And one of the benefits that some of these nonprofit organizations provide is that they have learned what works and they're able to take that to scale. So some of the most rigorous research on charter school effectiveness done by very well-respected research institutions in the country have shown that models like KIPP are delivering fantastic results, particularly for students of color and students who are living in poverty.
I want to get to a few phone calls here. Did you want to jump in, Preston?
I'll wait.
No. Go ahead very quickly if you would.
I'm going to say that, one of the issues, because we've been talking quite a bit about concerns about African-American students, students of color. One issue that when I've been talking about this sort of public-private issue about charters really has to do with how students are treated in terms of, like, discipline policies. One thing that I have written in a lot of my research is that charter schools have, you know, in many can develop their own discipline policies, and they don't necessarily have to be commensurate with the due process requirements that traditional public schools have to provide. And so this is definitely a concern for students of color who, in many cases, undergo high, disproportionate suspensions and expulsions in traditional public schools where due process is provided. And so one thing that I would love to see happen nationally is that we make sure that at the very least charter schools also provide those discipline policies at the same level, just to make sure that those protections are in place.
And I think on another side of this, Robert Cotto, there's this question about whether or not charter schools are actually educating students of the same population as the rest of a school district like Hartford, whether or not because of the policies that they have around discipline, because of the policies they have around admittance, whether or not they're actually educating a different class of students and potentially then getting better grade results because they've got the cream of the crop, the students that they want to have there, not just the students that the rest of the school district has to educate.
Yeah, I think that's important. I just put together a report called Choice Watch, in which we looked at the demographics of all the state's charter schools, magnet schools, and technical schools. And what we found was that, and we'll talk in particular charter schools overall, about 90% of the children that attend the state's charter schools are children of color. I think about 75% of those children are eligible for free and reduced lunch. And then kind of when you break it out, you really realize that there are kind of two different parts of the charter school sector. There's kind of these really small charter schools. They're kind of smaller boutique alternative schools like Explorations and Winstead, Odyssey and Manchester. And then you have Charter School Inc., right? You have the Achievement First, you have the Jamokies, and these are the kind of the big, almost school district size charter school networks. And so what we looked at was we saw that although these children may be children of color in Achievement First, in Jamokie, they often don't share the same characteristics such as bilingualism or students with disabilities or even free and reduced lunch characteristics as kids that would attend the school across the street from them. And so let me give you a quick example. Jamokie, right? Jamokie has almost all African-American, West Indian kids. There's some Latino kids there as well in the mix. However, almost half of those children, I think it's like 40% of the kids, don't even live in Hartford. They actually come from Bloomfield, Windsor, Manchester, East Hartford, and almost 60% of the kids are eligible for free lunch, 40% not. Now you go down the street, down Blue Hills Avenue in Hartford, and you go to Martin Luther King School. Martin Luther King, almost all the kids are kids of color. All of them are eligible for free and reduced lunch. And we're talking kind of multiple times the number of children with disabilities, not necessarily children that are bilingual because that's the Black North End. There aren't as many bilingual kids. But it's a very different population of kids. And so when you think about, well, how are these schools going to perform? How are they going to support these kids? It's easier to support a school where half the kids are eligible for free and reduced lunch and half of them are not. And half of them come from the suburbs where their parents are helping them. They've given them a ride to school. Whereas in Martin Luther King, those are the kids that often have been kicked out of the school Achievement First or kicked out of Jamokie or couldn't find a school somewhere else in the district. And I've had those reports from parents that are saying Martin Luther King is getting the short end of the stick here. Achievement First has been fixed. Jamokie's getting all this money, but Martin Luther King hasn't been fixed. And I've been in that building when they fumigated it last summer. There were roaches and rodents in that building up until that point. But across the street, Achievement First has fixed. It's in relatively decent shape. It has a lot of advantages that the other schools in the school district don't have.
We're taking some phone calls here at 860-275-7266. There's a lot of people who want to join us. Larry is calling from Hartford. Larry, I believe City Council Member Larry Deutsch. Hi, Larry.
Good morning, John and your listeners. There's so many questions raised. I'd just like to throw out a couple general. One, isn't it a question, as any public official knows, of responsibility for democracy? And the question is, you've discussed about transparency, the FOR requirements, mostly benefiting parents and taxpayers. And as a progressive person in a city council, we have to watch out for the role active of parents in what we've called a public school. The other, of course, isn't it a question financially, where we have hair-raising accounts of high salaries, bureaucracies, lawyers, contracts, consultants, and so on. And shouldn't the public be outraged at times, even if it's a nonprofit, at all the paperwork and management fees that you have already touched upon. And finally, many of our parents say, isn't it a question of respect for the parents and taxpayers and the teachers and the unions as playing a valid role in governance? And all this means a public school model, which is truly public, truly controlled by parents and taxpayers, rather than having so many layers that you've already discussed, where there's the questions of information flow, questions of financial management and mismanagement,
sure,
the neighborhood schools in particular getting the short end of the stick, as Robert Cotto just said. The differentiation between neighborhood and charter schools is unacceptable. It adds to the disparities that we all are outraged about.
Larry, thank you very much for your phone call. Quickly, we want to get to Kathy, who's in Manchester. Hi, Kathy. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
You know, it's a really interesting conversation. I'm a school reformist. I'm an educator here in Connecticut. And I think this is a two fundamental problems that we have here in the state. Number one, we're looking towards alternative education for our students, charter schools, magnet schools. And I am a huge proponent of both of those because I see that public schooling, the way we do schooling right now, is antiquated and it's dated back in the 1890s. Number one. But number two, I look at the credentials of the people that are running these major schools, and we keep hearing about the lack of credentials they have. You know, as an educator here in the state, I am vetted at multiple levels. So when I apply for a job, and I'm a university professor right now, whenever I apply for those jobs, my transcripts are vetted. I go through background checks. And I find that when I hear that there's inequities in the people who are running these programs, and I can list a number of them at very high levels, by the way, I see that there's real inequity of who's running the schools and then how the teachers and the are vetted differently.
And Kathy, thank you very much for that. I have to take a break because we've got to make sure we do that one more time before the end of this interesting conversation. We're going to come back with our guests and take more of your phone calls as we talk about charter schools in Connecticut and around the nation. That's what we're talking about today, where we live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow, New Jersey Governor Chris Christie's making headlines again. A few weeks back, he vetoed a bill that would have restricted the size of gun magazines, angering a number of gun control advocates, including some Sandy Hook parents. Tomorrow, we will hear from one of those parents. We'll also talk to reporters who've been covering that story and get the latest on Christie's controversial visit to Connecticut earlier this week. Join us tomorrow on Where We Live and always online at WNPR.org. We're talking today about charter schools and charter school oversight. Preston Green is here from the NEAG School of Education, Jennifer Alexander from ConCan, Robert Cotto Jr., who's a member of the Hartford Board of Education and Director of Urban Educational Initiatives at Trinity College. A few more phone calls as we're running low on time. Ebony Murphy is calling us from Rye, New York. Ebony, you've been on the program before, and you're also, I believe, running for lieutenant governor.
I am with John Pelto. I'm teaching in Rye this morning.
What's in your mind quickly? Go ahead.
I think we need to stop splitting hairs. Jamoki is Fuse. Fuse is Jamoki. The new executive director is Sharp's nephew. It was all the same people, the same offices. I worked there in the fall of 2012, and we were supposed to be in the new conservatory building. We never got in that building. We started the school year in the Asylum Hill Congregational Church for 2 weeks, and then we spent a week in the damp church basement at St. Justin's School before moving into another Asylum Hill building, the old OPP building. So that conservatory building never even got used. The press and the FBI, they need to reach out to the teachers, ask the teachers what's going on, because Jennifer at ConCan doesn't know, Jeff Villar at CCR doesn't know, Steve Perry, who is shilling for the Koch brothers, doesn't know. Ask the teachers, because education is not something that can be delivered as a package. We need to ask the people who are actually doing the work in these schools. Ask the Jamoki teachers. They want to tell what's going on.
Well, and we have, and Ebony, thank you very much for your phone call. And we do have another teacher from Jamoki on the line in just a moment, but a quick response to Jennifer.
So it's my understanding that the FBI is talking to everybody and anybody who has anything to do with the school, including, I would guess, teachers. Again, I would just say that it's clear that there has been a series of very, very poor, to say the least, decisions made at Fuse and Jamoki. And I am sure that after this investigation is complete, we will understand the extent of that. And I hope that swift action will be taken.
Liz is calling from New Britain. Hi, Liz.
Hi. I was a volunteer as a teacher educator in Jamoki School when Ms. Dickerson first
organized it in 1997, and I have to tell you what charter schools were then were not corporate. They were not hedge funds. They were not big management companies. They were teachers and parents who wanted to organize for a better thing. It was supposed to be an Afrocentric school. There was bilingual education. It was a wonderful school where teachers cared about the children. When it got corporate, that's when things changed.
Liz, thank you very much for that. Well, okay, we've just got a couple minutes left. Can we just go around our little panel here and discuss that issue? Liz says she was working early on in the charter schools here in Connecticut. They were different then than they are now. Is there something, Jennifer, to what she says about when they become more corporate, when they become bigger and these big management companies, they change the basic nature of what they were supposed to be?
Well, with all due respect, it's my understanding, if you look at the historical data on Jamoke, that it actually wasn't doing very well. Mr. Sharp came in and took over the school. And the performance of kids actually started to increase. So, good things were happening in that building. It's only recently that that organization has expanded beyond its original Jamoke schools, just within the last couple of years. We will find out the length of those problems and how long they have gone back. If I could, I just want to go back to one point that was made earlier that I find a bit troubling, this argument that charter schools somehow cream the best or the most motivated kids. In our cities, charter schools only educate between 6% and 8% of the student population. I have a hard time stomaching the idea that the rest of the students in our cities aren't also motivated and don't also want a great education. And I think we have to take a careful look at that information, because it's my understanding that charter schools have, in the last few years, taken on this challenge and are seeing English language learner enrollments increasing. But
they're not at the levels, as Robert said before, not at the levels that the traditional public schools are.
Well, in fact, it's my understanding that in some of our schools, for example, in Achievement First Kindergarten, their percentage of English language learners is now higher than the district in New Haven. So they are actively doing more to recruit families whose students are English language learners. And special education is an entirely different conversation. Can they do more to recruit special education students? Yes. Are there also issues where those schools are intervening early and giving kids early intervention and thereby decreasing the identification of special education? Yes. It's a much more complicated situation than just creaming.
I'm wondering, Preston Green, if you can just respond to this question about charter schools and whether or not they work in one form versus another. This idea that as it gets big and corporate and there's a lot of money involved, that changes the nature of education.
Well, I just wanted to, if I will, sort of like take on what the caller did bring up,
yeah.
Which was that charter school, is that she had said the charter schools were originally this sort of like small, kind of like a mom and pop activity of people coming in, and it had sort of morphed into more of a corporate experience. And that is what has been happening nationally, that the charter schools had changed really from this sort of small idea of people coming in to these, more corporatization. And that what has happened with this is that our laws need to catch up, that we have seen in other areas where we've had these organizations come in and then have not made the adjustment in terms of having the disclosure that is necessary to make sure, that the money is spent in ways that we would like to see.
And Robert Cotto Jr., I'm just going to give you the last word because we're running very low on time here on the program.
Yes, thank you. I think I share the caller's concerns that the city schools, the urban schools, and also all schools, we need improvement. And there's parents that are desperate for better schools. And I think oftentimes the charters have been put in front of them, not necessarily as the best option, but just another option. And I think if we're going to have those choices, it needs to have equity. We need to have the same rules that we have in public schools related to discipline, related to disclosure, related to serving all of the students that are in the neighborhood that other schools would have to serve. And I think that's what we need to move forward. It's talking about choice with equity and having those safeguards, because this is not an isolated incident. As you recall, last year, Achievement First had the highest number of suspensions and expulsions out of any school district in the entire state, all of the Achievement First schools. A couple years ago, we had Highville Charter School, and they had another scandal. So I think we need better rules. Thank you.
Robert Cotto Jr. is Director of Urban Educational Initiatives at Trinity College. He's a member of the Hartford Board of Education. Preston Green is John and Carla Klein Professor of Urban Education at the NEAG School of Education at UConn, and Jennifer Alexander is Chief Executive Officer of ConCan. I want to thank you all for joining us on this conversation and all of our callers as well. Continue the conversation at WNPR.org. Thanks to our producers Lydia Brown and Tucker Ives. The executive producer is Katie Talarski. This is Where We Live.